This is my radio story on Algoa FM.
So, I'm Shaw Leslie.
And I'm Caroline Kelleher, and this feels really weird.
Yes, because I asked you before we came in here today, when last were you and I in an on-air studio?
No idea.
This is not for the purposes of being on radio. Last time probably would have been. And I, for the life of me, can't remember when it might have been.
Cannot think of it either. But we go way, way back, Shaw.
Yeah.
too way back.
It's my standing joke. You can't fire me. Slaves have to be sold. And I think I'm on the asset register now. I've been here for so long.
No, me too.
But I think that we've been depreciated all the way, so that's not all bad. So as part of World Radio Day, some of the colleagues have kind of gotten together and have spoken about, my radio story.
Yeah.
So let's talk about yours, because to call it your radio story is slightly misleading because of your background in television and theatre and also radio.
Can this be our radio story?
Yeah.
Because I started the very first time I was on air. Was with
7:30 a.m. news on,
yes,
Sunday breakfast, the,
yes,
first time I had Sunday breakfast.
and you know, the funny thing was, having come from television, and I remember going live for the first time on TV, and we didn't have
teleprompter.
It was like you had to remember.
Really, really?
You had to remember. And it was in Port Alfred, and we were live. And I remember, you know, they talk you down in your ear. Huh. We're going live in 1, 2, 3, and yeah. And I thought my heart was going to jump out of my chest. And you would think then, going to radio where I couldn't be seen, that Sunday morning, I mean, you were amazing. You were so wonderful and so caring and kind. When I sat down with that, and we also didn't read off a PC. There was the
paper.
Hard copy in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how old I am. Yeah,
small A5 sheets.
Yes, and a studio where you could smoke up a storm if you were a smoker.
And
it was like a discotheque in there. There was, there was so much smoke.
Well, Jill was famous for a boxer show. I'm not kidding. That was always very entertaining. Your radio journey started by doing 7:30 a.m. news on my Sunday breakfast.
That's
would
right.
have been in...
1996.
It would have had to be 96,
yeah,
because by 97, early 97, we were at the Atrium and you started working with me in the SABC building.
And then you, Shaw, you started at Varsity, didn't you?
Radio, yeah.
Yeah.
My radio journey was, I corrected a factual error that Roger Thomas, the then station manager of Radio Uppy at the then UPE,
yes,
made.
Yeah.
And Craig Godfrey, who was with me at Dale College, but did a gap year. So he and I were first years together. He did their finances, and I corrected this factual error. And when he told Roger, Roger said, if he's so damn clever, tell him to come and be our music manager. And that's what I did.
And that's how it started.
I wasn't on radio. I literally did record company correspondence and their weekly chart. And it's ironic because it's almost gone full circle, because that's now what I do for this station.
Yeah.
I'm the music compiler, primarily. And then one day, a guy didn't arrive for his show, and the record that was playing started to stick. And I had no idea how this equipment worked.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at it for a couple seconds, like panic-stricken, and thought, okay, well, it's sticking now, so stop it. So I pushed stop, and it went, and then went, oh, that's not good. And I pushed start, and it went, and it knocked it out of the groove, and it kind of came on. And then when the guy arrived, he said to me, you know, we should really teach you how to use the equipment. And besides, you could probably be on radio. You don't have a bad voice. And there we go.
Awesome. you have a voice made for radio, let's face it.
Apparently, and every now and then the comment is also past a face for radio. I was at Campus Radio. In 1991, I gave Martin Bester his first job in radio. I was the station manager of the then Radio Uppy in 1991. Martin Bester came and auditioned. Rodney Kowalski was also given his first radio job more or less the same time. And then Martin and I also became fairly good friends, to the extent that when Algoa FM was going to go 24 hours, they broadcast until 1 and from 5. they asked for auditions. Martin got the Monday to Friday. I got the Saturday, Sunday. We did the very first one, January 1st, wow, 1994, with Neil Pinnar and Jill Stewart and Liz Ross in studio after we'd been at Happy Valley.
And what did you study at Varsity, for those who don't know?
I have a largely unused BCom law. Mm-hmm. And the number of times somebody said to me, shouldn't you have used your law degree? Are you sorry you didn't use your law degree? I remind them that when people think law, they think in terms of criminal. A BCom law means private law, commercial law, yes, mercantile law, business management, economics, accounting. So, yes, I've used facets of it plenty of times over the years. And in a very quick aside dig, I love to remind people in this building that I am the only person in the building with a business management degree. in my less subtle, less kind moments. So, yeah, I went on to do 1 to 5, yeah, in the morning. And unbeknownst to me and to Martin, there was, in fact, a plan to get rid of us by about the halfway mark and go to automation. But here's the best news ever. It turned out we developed quite well in the 6 months, and they decided that they would in fact keep us. And Martin was then moved to lunch very soon afterwards. And then just a couple of years passed before he and I handled him breakfast and me afternoon drive in 96.
What a loss it would have been to the radio industry, two of the finest talents in radio.
So you started with me on Sunday breakfast. Yeah. What happened next?
My memory is not very...
We've been looking in the newspaper clippings and trying to work out what came next.
From there, Martin was doing mid-morning.
Yes.
And then I started on his show doing an entertainment insert. And then we just, we kind of worked together on air. And then, I kind of became a co-host. And then Martin went to breakfast.
Yeah, in April 2000.
Oh, your memories go me and dates.
Because that's when I went to 9 to 12.
Okay.
So it was, what was the breakfast show called?
It was The Big Breakfast.
That's right.
And Brett Atkins was also producer. Part of the... Yeah, the producer. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
You were part of the very first on-radio wedding.
That's right, yeah. We had a live wedding in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on Lance's show, wasn't it?
Yes, I think it was.
Because I also worked with Lance. He was on Breakfast for a while, and I also worked...
I remember that being the case. What happened was, from 2000 to 2002, you were with Martin on Breakfast. Then I think Lance took Breakfast, and you worked with him. Then Darren got Breakfast, and you worked with him.
Yes.
And it was like, the Breakfast show hosts come, and they go,
and Carol Ann just stays.
That being said, it was something Charlie and the Blonde... Wasn't that how Breakfast was billed at some point with Darren?
It was the morning show.
Yeah.
It was the Breakfast with Darren Man, Charlie.
Yeah. The one thing that I do remember, though, is that it was one of the first times that we went to a three-host breakfast show.
Yes, that's right.
And that was a serious trend in radio at the time, was to have your anchor host, who was able to go very hard serious, or very light, a kind of female foil, which was the role that you played, and then the Joker / Fall guy, and that was inevitably Charlie D. And look, here we are, 300 years later, and he's still making bad puns on radio. I really would have thought that would have been over by now, but here we are.
Let's talk a highlight for you of your radio career.
You know what? I'm forced to be a little more verbose and say I've had some bleak moments in radio. The entertainment industry isn't always kind. It isn't always lovely. You are disposable. You are forgettable. Mm-hmm. Almost no matter how good you are.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I have had a blessed career in terms of some of the artists I've been able to talk to, not always in person, often on the phone.
Yeah.
But in no particular order, Bryan Adams, Neil Diamond, all these people.
Yes, yeah.
One of my fondest memories is getting Bryan Adams to swear. That was great fun. And also, Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits, and I. talked about how to make the perfect cup of tea and how people get it wrong. Stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I love. I think the most famous person I ever got to interview was Simon Cowell.
Okay.
And I remember
during the high-waisted period.
And I must admit, I did find him a tad sexy. And I remember flirting with him a little bit, and I so wish I had that audio, but yeah.
Now, there's the thing, because now that I'm hosting the Sunday Gold program called Algoa FM Rewind, I am playing the music of so many artists I have interviewed. And
wouldn't it be lovely if you'd archived all of that material?
The thing is, I've also, and you as well, you and I have been in radio from the reel-to-reel and vinyl era, just as CDs became a thing.
Yes.
All the way through to full digital. I mean,
absolutely.
There is no recording equipment in here now because it's going straight onto a hard drive. Mm-hmm.
I remember when we used to do a section on famous birthdays. There was a big book in the green room. And that room, everyone used to come and smoke there. And there was just this, you worked in this haze of smoke.
Yeah.
And we had this big book, and you went and you looked in the book for your people, you know, youngsters. To have the internet at your disposal is incredible. But just quickly to get back to what you were saying, when one talks about my radio story, to have had a career in radio, it is such a niche career. It's as you say, it is a blessing, and it's something to be so grateful for. And you know, people say, oh, are you still with Algoa when they bump into me? What
same,
are you doing now?
So
I'm like, yeah, I'm still there. I love what I'm doing now. I'm at a stage in my life where, and you, let's face it, you do have a shelf life.
Surely.
On here, you really do. But where I love making other people look good. If I can do something for your show, if I can help in any way, I love that part of the business now.
I'm glad that you're still with us. And yes, Carol Ann has done. Well, tell us what you do for the station now, because a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
So in addition to Are You Still There?
Yes.
Do you do?
Okay, so I provide content for the website. And I write, I do the marketing, their scripts for them, for promos, for live reads, for events and what have you, script writing for them. I handle the Algoa Cares diary, which I love. I handle the events diary. What else do I do?
Well, here's the other thing.
I do a little bit of everything.
Well,
I assist with setting up interviews, maybe providing content, suggestions for shows, etc. I do the podcasting for the website.
What happened when I used to do Sunday breakfast and then moved to Sunday lunch and we had the Sunday sit down, often they were, not very often, but often they were recorded and Carol Ann would pre-edit them for us, cut them in half if they needed to be done.
I love editing. Okay, so we've talked about what I do now. A lot of people still think that jocks choose the music.
Yeah.
And the success of a radio station, part of it, because we are a music-driven radio station primarily.
Yeah, FM is an adult contemporary radio station.
Is the choice of music, the music that we play, getting that mix right is incredibly challenging. And you're not going to please all of the people all of the time.
It is, however, surprisingly scientific. And I do actually want to unpack that.
Yeah, please do.
Very slightly.
Yeah, it's fascinating for people who don't know.
If you listen to Algoa FM, you will hear, by virtue of the fact that music makes up nearly 70% of what comes out of the speakers or headphones or whatever else, that it would be foolish to allow people to simply choose their own music. In other words, you need some kind of structure. You need to play music that is a mix of familiar and new. But how old do you go? We've also seen how adult contemporary as a format has evolved dramatically over the years. It's gone from being ballad after ballad after ballad to now more a pop sound, for instance. So the question is, how do you decide what music to play? Well, you ask people. We do research on an ongoing basis to make sure that our audience is telling us what it is that they want to hear. But you're so right when you say you cannot please all the people all the time. The best you can hope for is most of the people
most of the time.
We work with scheduling software. In other words, we have a database of music that is sorted into categories. We tell the scheduling software to put that category song there, then that category song there, then that category song there. And what we're constantly trying to do is vary era, tempo, and genre.
Mm-hmm.
And the unspoken deal we have with our audience, and a particularly fiercely loyal audience that Algoa FM has,
yes,
is that I am prepared to come out and say, I don't think it is possible to hear a third song in a row on this station that you won't know or won't like.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of our success factors, definitely. And music has changed so much. I mean, we've watched how from the 50s, when all the songs were 1 minute 56, to things like Don McLean's American Pie, mm-hmm, in the 70s,
yes,
that were 8.5 minute, mm-hmm, minute kind of rock operas,
yes,
Bohemian,
yeah,
Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Now we're going back to 2 minute songs. And, mm-hmm, it's very interesting,
yeah,
to me that that's also kind of gone full circle.
Full circle. Right.
I think it's an attention span thing now, though.
No, that is so true. Okay, so most embarrassing moment on air.
You know, it's a tricky one. So the other thing is profanity is obviously preferably,
yes,
not on radio. I've been on radio for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 F-bombs.
Ooh, that's a lot.
It only came out of my mouth twice. The other three were other people.
I think Harry Crick was one of them. Yes, during a news.
Yes, and now I'm going to tell the story.
Yes.
Darren used to close the news audio channel on the desk. And the 9 o'clock news very seldom, because when I did 9 to 12, the 9 o'clock news very seldom had audio in it. But the 10 o'clock news, Harry always made sure had audio in, mm-hmm, it. And the newsreader fires the audio from the other side of the desk, but it plays out on a channel that is open in front of me,
yes,
or really, really, really should be. And day after day after day, because all you're doing when the newsreader is busy is you start prepping the weather, you start looking at something else, and,
yeah,
all you're listening for is for them to go, top news story at this hour, so you know now you need to come back and focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Harry had just really, honestly had enough. And he said, Mark net deep, beep, 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 dung, whoop. My first F-bomb was completely unintentional, and it was a spoonerism. They are Simon and Garfunkel. I got it wrong famously. Then Martelise Colver was responsible for two F-bombs during the entertainment news slots when I did 9 to 12.
Really? I don't remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. RF, I'm Just Jealous was one of them. And the other one wasn't an F word. It was it was about J.D. Salinger's accountant had been stealing from him, and he was up on 12 counts of fraud.
Oh, yeah.
Martin, he's got that word,
yes,
wrong. However, my best one of those, and I stood in for Alfie J on the reflective radio chart while,
yeah,
we were still at the atrium.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a rule at the time that you should not start the ad break with an ad voiced by you, because
you've gone from your
radio presenting
voice sound good
to either a highly compressed or,
yeah,
a different delivery or,
mm-hmm,
an accent or something like that. But the Operative Hire Services had a live read, a live read commercial that I'd recorded,
mm-hmm,
and it was, and I didn't realize, the first ad in the bracket. And as it started playing, I went, oh! And thought to myself, wow, that was really clear in my ears. And
I looked up
and the red light was on. I looked down, I turned off the microphone, I took the headphones off. And in those days, the studio had a private line. It was a normal corded phone that didn't ring, it flashed. Because obviously you don't want a ringing thing. And I literally sat and watched that phone for the rest of the show. I made one phone call from it. I phoned Martin Bester to tell him this had happened and that he was going to be the only person I was going to tell, because you have 90 days to register a complaint. After,
mm-hmm,
that, you can't. And on the 91st day, I went to the program manager and said, this had happened 3 months ago. Did you get any complaints? But they didn't, and we kind of lived to tell the tale. Do you have any particularly gory...
I think Charlie T, we used to do birthday messages.
Oh, how did I not even arrive at this one proactively? Oh, yes.
Yeah, and you know, people used to send us their birthday messages. So it would be Cindy van der Merwe, happy 21st birthday from your mom, your dad, they love you. And Charlie T, he slipped out and he went to the studio next door. He put on a voice and he called through into the studio and pretended to be somebody else. And you are so busy in the studio
A breakfast particularly show. Breakfast.
And the calls are coming in. You're writing it down. And he said, I just want to wish Joe Ma. And then he said, I'm going to spell it. S-E-P-O-E-S. Yeah.
And Carol Ann did it justice.
Yes.
And every couple of years, that recording ends up back on my phone.
I think it's somewhere. It's been around the world. It's been to Australia. It's been everywhere. And then I think another, I don't know if this is embarrassing or now maybe I wear it as a
badge of honor.
A badge of honor, yes. We were doing an interview with a lady whose name I can't remember from the Oceanarium. And it was about an event. You know, it was that was happening at the Oceanarium. I don't know what happened to me. She was talking about the dolphins and the tricks and everything. And then I leant into the microphone and I said, well, you do know the only reason that the dolphins do those tricks is because you starve them for food so that they will. Oh, my word. I got reported. There was a complaint laid against me.
It's controversial, that one, hey?
Yeah. But then, you know what was interesting is after that, and this is all because I had read a book by Rick O'Barry called Behind the Dolphin Smile. And it's about how we abuse animals when we put them into captivity.
For our entertainment.
And we think it's educational, but it really is. It's not educational to see an animal not in its natural habitat. And I'd read the book by Rick O'Barry, and we then got hold of Rick O'Barry in America, and we interviewed him. Yeah, as I say, embarrassing, because, oh my word, from people. I had to apologize, and it was right. What I did was wrong within the context of that. It was wrong.
Mm.
And so I apologized on air, yeah.
Yeah, I really don't want to go into it much, but myself and Doreen stood in on the breakfast show once and nearly got the station sued by local government, by the Eastern Cape government. There was a purported video of the then premier of the Eastern Cape drunk in a tavern. And we referred to the existence of the video and said where you could find it. That was all because I did mention I studied law. I'm not entirely stupid. It nearly became an international incident from what I understood.
I don't remember this.
And I had to apologize quite profusely and quite impressively. We nearly needed to lawyer up and go and fight that battle. But it is, as I said to them, it is the job of any breakfast show host to get the station sued unsuccessfully.
Yes, I so agree with
Where
you.
Is that line? And I said, you know, Darren and them had been doing it for years. They never got as close to being sued as I got them in one day.
And of course, you and I, we've done quite a few MC events together.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. We did. It was Miss Cabana. When it was still United Dairies.
Down at the Happy Valley.
And then when Sheena moved to Clover, it became Miss Tropica. And I used to absolutely loathe you because Carol Ann used to learn her scripts. And I used to sit there going, well, if I screw up, at least I know she's going to save me. She knows exactly where we're supposed to be. I think we famously skipped 5 pages of a script one evening at one of those events as well. That was absolutely nightmarish. But my best ever was when you and I hosted the On The Go show.
Oh, yes. Many moons ago.
And we got introduced to Brunhilde, the stage manager. but on one of the evenings of the On The Go show.
Isn't it the first one?
I don't know. For some reason, I thought it was the Friday night. Because that didn't it run on a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday?
I think
it was the Friday night. Carol Ann and I kind of didn't need our own dressing rooms because we used one dressing room. Because you'd arrive dressed, I would simply need to add. No,
dressed.
You didn't. Carol Ann that night was wearing a body stocking type thing with a kind of spider web type sheer dress. I could. And we were chatting and chatting and chatting and chatting and went for a smoke and chatting and chatting and chatting and this part and this part. And then we got the 5-minute call. It was the 5-minute call to go on stage. And Caroline said, oh, I must put on my dress.
Didn't have the dress.
Where's my dress? Mm-hmm. Then there was some
and Gary,
yes.
My husband at the time.
Yeah.
He made a mad dash and Flip, thank you. He got it to me in time.
I still don't know how. Yeah, I think they padded Flip. A little. The orchestra played a little bit longer or something that. And there we were.
Charles, something people often ask me is, don't you miss being on radio? And I say, you know, in all honesty, there is a season for everything. Mm. And I'm really happy what I'm doing now. And Lee is amazing. I love her on air. The Breakfast Show is great. The team they've got together now. But something that I do miss is we used to do so many productions.
Mm.
And I really, really miss that kind of acting part of it. You know, doing, I remember we did a Fawlty Towers series. Charlton was, I know nothing, Mr. Fawlty.
Yes.
And of course, you know, I was Sybil. Sybil, yes, Mr. Fawlty. I really miss doing those fun productions.
Yeah. You also had the fragrance advert series.
Oh, yes. Oh, we did some fun stuff production-wise.
Corruption.
Yes. Flip, yes. And don't you remember, we also did, you and I together, we did the story of the Christmas tree.
Yeah, how the angel
Hello,
got
Santa and how
with Roy Williams.
Yes, yes, yes.
The story of how the angel got on the Christmas tree.
Watch this space. So I have written a children's book. It's called Tandi from the Land of Thonk. But I want it to be made into a podcast series. Using, Charles, I think you would make a perfect narrator. There are so many different voices in it.
I've been cast into that enough times. I'm a good narrator.
You really are.
My Enid Blyton impersonation
it's
is spot
awesome.
On.
And I want all the jocks to be in it as the different characters. And that, you know, a podcast series that's going to live on Algo FM for
nice.
Our audience. Yeah.
Anyway. We've been chatting for over half an hour. And I'm sure that left to our own devices, we could probably still be here in another 30 minutes. I must say, you remain one of the most special, talented people who is not really ideally suited to the entertainment industry. You are far too soft. But every now and then, as tough as nails when the occasion calls for it. And I think that is the secret of your longevity in as what I said, what can sometimes be a fairly cruel and shallow industry.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for those lovely words. You really are an amazing talent. I was just going to say multi-skilled, really multi-talented, multi-skilled. You are such an asset to this business because, you know, if so-and-so can't do a show, you can slot into any show on the station and do it with finesse.
You know, I have done every show on the station at one time or other. Every single show has been mine, with the exception of Weekday Breakfast.
Yeah.
That's the only show I've ever had. But I understand that breakfast show host is a very, very specific kind of animal.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, there were the years of Charles Cooks.
Yes. So what do you miss? I mean,
I miss doing Charles Cooks, I must say. I simply no longer have the time because at the time that Charles Cooks started, I was on air 6 days a week. But you're only on air for 3 hours. So you've got the hour or two of prep for the show, the actual... Mm-hmm.
Doing the shopping,
Yeah, but now when it comes to Charles Cooks, it used to... One 500-word edition with two recipes takes a day and a half. There's coming up with the concept. There's the shopping, the testing... then the food styling and photographing, then the actual typing up of the column, and then all the rest of it. So when I became full-time as the compiler, we kind of ran out of available time. But I continue to kind of dabble.
Yes.
I've become one of those people who is now, and I blame my mother for this, the shortcut expert. Not fake. Mm-hmm. Just shortcuts.
Okay. Like a hack.
Yes. It's kind of our life hacks. Pressure cookers for the win. Deep fryers, I'm here for that as well. I need an air fryer, though.
Oh, no. The hype is real. I cook my entire supper in an air fryer. Sure. One last thing. I must admit, I am missing the Sunday sit down, and I'm thinking we need to organize that. There's a podcast series that lives on the website, and yeah, I think that would be.
So yeah, you and I will then go back to sourcing guests, booking studio time.
I love
Carol Ann will edit it, and we'll pop it on the website.
Yes, we will indeed.
It's been really great catching up with you, getting a little bit of insight into your radio story, and now it's there for everyone else to hear as well. Cool.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.